EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We won't report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
Howdy, dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, and I hope you're all doing okay. I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Our first guest we have tonight is Lauren in British Columbia, Canada. And Lauren will not only be sharing her own experience, but also her mother's in 1940, her grandparents' sighting of a close-up UFO in Mexico in 1972, and her husband's possible abduction from the family camper in 1965 when he was a child. And following Lauren, we speak with Nate in Oregon about what happened while on a road trip with his son in Nevada in 2021. They both witnessed a convoy with a large military and police presence transporting a strange object on the back of a flatbed truck. Lauren is up next. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Good evening, Lauren, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Nick.
It is great to have you with us, and you're calling from Canada.
Yeah, so we're located in the Vancouver area. And most of what I have to say tonight does sort of originate in the BC, province of BC. But there is one story that's a deep, dark family secret from Mexico that I had to ask the entire family if it was okay to share.
Okay, you are prepared and you're up on the West Coast. Great stuff. Now, Lauren, you have joined us to share some of your experiences. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, ma'am?
Sure. And I guess really where it really starts is I think I've been thinking quite a lot about this for a long time, about sharing these with you. I've listened to this, the show for a long time and it's excellent. And really just sort of what held me back was the fact that, like so many families, I think we really felt like this, you know, the stories I'm about to say were family secrets. So I had to turn around and go to my brothers and sisters and my mom, who's now 83, to say, are you okay with me sharing this now? And funny enough, she came out with a story that I had never, ever heard before. At the age of 83, this was my first time hearing this secret. But she told me that when she was growing up in Abbotsford, they were a farming family there. And she said that she just sort of said to me matter-of-factly when I was asking her if it was okay to share on the podcast, she said, well, we always knew the way that they were there. Everybody knew about them. And I said, well, what do you mean, UFOs? And she's like, oh, my God, yeah. She goes, we used to see them all the time. So we're going back to about 1940s, the early 40s. She said about 46. She was about 6 or 7 years old. And she was walking in one of the farm roads with her sister and her cousin. And this UFO just whipped across the sky in front of them. And she said, oh, we knew right away what it was. And we had heard about them from people. And so we went running to the local. They knew where the local reporter lived. So they went running all the way to her house. They were so excited to tell this woman about this UFO that they'd seen. And they basically got laughed at. She's like, oh, yeah, right. You know, so my mom says, I don't care what anybody else says. We know what we saw. And that's kind of where this all sort of starts from. So it's her parents that when we were in the 1970s, they used to live in the Shuswap. But before that, they lived in Kamloops and they owned several city blocks there. They built a big complex there. So anyways, they did that when I was a kid. And then they'd spend their winters in Mexico. And then they eventually sold the blocks, and they made a lot of money and started wintering seriously down in Puerto Vallarta. And this is about, oh gosh, got to be about 40, 50 years ago now. So it would have been the late 70s. And they used to rent a villa down there, and they were kind of hanging out with a pretty racy crowd. I think some of the people that they used to hang out with were sort of heirs to the Heinz ketchup fortune. So they thought, you know, they were kind of having a really good time down there. But when they came home with this story, they said to us, they said, please don't ever say anything to anybody, because this ever got out. You know, I mean, it would have at that time in the 70s, if people had heard this story that I'm about to tell you, they would have been ousted from their social group. They would have lost their friends in Kamloops. They would have been laughing stocks in the community, because there was such a, I don't know, there was just such skepticism and lack of belief in those generations. But this is what happened to them. So apparently they came home after a dinner party one night, and they were sitting out on their second floor deck. And it was a beautiful night, and there was a bunch of stars out, and there was a nice breeze, and they were just enjoying that, just about to go to bed. And right, there was a palm tree about 10 feet off the deck, and it only went up about another 10 or 15 feet above the deck. And she said that while they were sitting there, this UFO just kind of dropped right out of the sky, and it stopped over top of the palm tree. And it just sat there. And we said, well, you know, what did it look like? And, oh, well, it was a normal, just like a UFO, she said, that you see on TV. It was saucer shaped. She said it had flashing lights all the way around it that were moving. And they didn't know what to do. And that's what I said, well, what did you do? Because that would have terrified me. And they said, yeah, we were really scared. So we just pretended we didn't see it. And we sat there, like didn't even move a muscle. Until it left. And until I'd heard that story, my grandmother was always bringing us home paperback books about UFOs and was always very interested in the topic. And then once I found out that they didn't tell us this until we were teenagers, like kids, it would be too much for us to handle. But when they did tell us finally, to me, it just made so much sense. So, and then the next story was around, I don't know, probably late 70s, I guess, we were at their place in Shuswap Lake, and they had a big, beautiful property that rolled down to the lake, big dock, and we used to water ski and have a really good time there. The whole family would be there every summer. So we were sitting down at in the sandy beach area, and we had a fire going, and we sit down there and play guitar and tell stories and laugh and whatever. And it was kind of twilight, and we're sitting there, and I was looking out over the mountain range, which is sort of the, I don't know what range, I guess close mountains probably. And it was just a beautiful evening. It was clear as a bell. And all of a sudden this light, and it was about the size of, I don't know, maybe the end of a chapstick, maybe that about that kind of a circle. And it was a really, really bright light. And it went shooting right across the whole mountain range. And it took about, I don't know, I'm going to say 3 seconds for it to get all the way across the mountain range, and it stopped dead. And then it literally just
stood there for in the sky for maybe one a count of three, and then just shot right up in the air straight and just disappeared out of sight. I thought, oh, wow, I'm kind of like, what did I just see? And I thought, that's got to have been a UFO. And I turned around and there was my grandmother and she was standing beside me. And even though the whole family knew that they had seen these things before and been pretty close to one, she whispered to me and she's like, did you see that? And I'm like, yeah, I totally saw that. And she's, well, that's a UFO. And, you know, it was just like it was almost a secret between the two of us, too, right? So we all knew about it, but we didn't really talk about it. But from that day on, because I had seen that, and I knew there was absolutely nothing on Earth that moves in that way. There's nothing that does that, that goes straight across that path and then goes straight up. I'm like, yeah, okay, so I believe. So that made me a believer. So then we'll move along here to I find the love of my life and I get married and this family story comes out. And I actually, this is an old story. So before I wanted to come on tonight and talk about it, I wanted to re-verify facts with the family and wanted to make sure that I remembered it right, because you have a tendency to embellish stories as you get older. And no, his 83 and 90-year-old parents tell this story exactly the way that I'm going to just tell you guys right now. And this is so odd because, and I'll explain why afterwards, but my husband is he's kind of got something different about him. He was out at 5 years old. The family was coming from Edmonton to Vancouver for a holiday before they moved here. And they were using a camping trailer. And it was one of those ones, you know, you pop up, you put behind the car and then you drive. And then when you get to where you're going, you pop up the walls and it locks from the inside. And it's got snaps all the way around it that, you know, secure it. And then there's kind of two sleeping areas. So they had his older brother, who was 7, on the floor, and they put Brian, who was 5, on this ledge that was kind of over the back of the trailer. And at that age, he still liked to be tucked in, so his mom did the sleeping bag tuck in where he dipped him right up, had his pillow in there with him, and it tucked him all in, so he was like a sort of a little slug there, and he couldn't really move. And off they go to sleep. They locked the door from the inside. In the morning, and he's gone, but it's not just him that's gone. It's his sleeping bag and his pillow, and there's nothing there. And it's still locked from the inside. So they're like, well, what the heck? So that's what they said, with a stronger language. But they, get out in the campground and they're yelling and they're calling and trying to find him. And they spent about 15 minutes looking for him and asking people, you know, if they'd seen this little boy. And then his dad decided, well, I better go start driving the highway to see if he wandered out by the highway, because it was fairly close to the highway where they were. And he went to unhitch. He looks down underneath the camper and directly underneath where he'd been sleeping, directly underneath. There he is, still tucked in. The whole way his sleeping bag is tucked in. His blanket, his pillow's still under his head. Like, it was just like I always said after hearing that story that they just put him back wrong. So they dropped him a little too low when they returned him, whoever took him. But that's such an odd story. And so that always sticks in my mind, because he has sort of an unusual immune system. So I've been with him for about 35 years, and I can only count 2 times that he's ever been sick that I know of, a cold or flu. I had COVID. I was in the same room with him. He's never had it. He never got sick. He just doesn't get sick. He doesn't get colds. He doesn't get anything. And when we were first sort of together, first few times we were going over to my parents' house, my mom was cooking for him. And the first time we went there, he came home and he's like, we were living together at the time, and he said, oh, I've got the worst stomach ache. And I thought, this is not like you. You never complain about pain. Something's got to be really wrong. So this went on for a couple hours where he was in agony. And I said, we're going to hospital. So we took him to Emerge, and the hospital was pretty close here. It was a community hospital. So they do some blood tests and they find an elevated, you know, white blood cell count. And they're like, yes, you're having problems with your appendix. It looks like your appendix is going to burst. We're going to have a surgeon come in the morning and, you know, take it out for you. So I go home, of course, because they won't let me stay. I get a call at 6:30 in the morning. Well, come pick me up. I'm going, well, what's going on? Well, you know what? They did another blood test before the surgeon took me in, and there's nothing wrong. So his blood test was completely normal. There was no sign of anything, and he was perfect. So then the next time this happened, it was, you know, well, the third time it happened, it was a joke. Because I'm like, okay, it's got to be my mother's cooking. There's something going on here that, you know, not normal, but I don't know what it is. So the fifth time it happened, he was at work this time. So he drives himself to the hospital. The doctor says, okay, be back at 4 o'clock for us. We're going to do the surgery right away. So he goes back, does some banking, goes for a beer with a buddy, then goes back to the hospital at 5 to 4, where the entire medical team is like, well, where the heck have you been? Blah, blah, blah. Freaking out. They wheel him in. And the next morning, I get a call again at 6:30 in the morning. And he's like, come pick me up. I'm like, well, what's going on? And he said, well, I just talked to the surgeon and they're going to let me go home in about an hour. So I need you to come in. So I went in to pick him up and he said, oh, you'll never believe this. And I'm like, well, what happened? Right. He goes, well, the surgeon asked if he could keep my appendix. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, do you know what an appendix is? And I said, well, not really. I know my brother's burst one time and he was really sick. And he said, yeah, it's a little dead piece of tissue that's kind of on the end of your, I guess, on the end of your colon. I'm not quite sure where, but it's dead. As the doctor explained it to him, it's not living tissue. It doesn't regenerate itself. If it gets infected, it has to be removed. Or, it, you know, basically, if it bursts, it just puts a bunch of poison into your system and you get really sick. I'm like, oh. And he said the doctor was, or the surgeon was really adamant, it doesn't heal itself. If it bursts, it pretty much has to be removed. I'm like, oh, okay. And he said, yeah, and he asked if you could keep it. And I said, well, why is that? He goes, well, because 6 separate sets of scar tissue on my appendix. So 5 times it had burst and healed itself. And then the 6th time they took it out. But honestly, every time that it burst, his entire system would have been flooded with these poisons. And within hours, he had metabolized it and completely, it was gone. It was like he was perfectly normal the next day, which is the weirdest thing I've ever heard of. We have a daughter and she's 11 and is diagnosed with leukemia. And it's pretty devastating, as you can imagine, for parents. And we kept saying, well, you know, with Brian's got half the good immune system, so I'm sure this is going to work. And we'll just wait for the miracle to happen. Well, she had to go on some pretty heavy oral chemo drugs, and these are for life. So she's got to be on these meds now the rest of her life. But it does keep the leukemia at bay. So she's totally healthy other than this. So anyways, she has a baby, and they said, okay, well, we'll let you go off these drugs because she gets married and has a baby. So she has the baby, and then she starts going for blood tests again. And the doctors are like, well, we're going to let you stay off your drugs. And she's like, well, why? And because apparently the cancer just isn't coming back. So it's been 2.5 years now that she's been off her chemo drugs and her cancer drugs. And it doesn't look at this point like she's going to have to go back on them. So I'm hoping that's a really good immune system that she got from her dad. But again, it's kind of an odd thing. And then the final sort of little episode that I had happened pretty recently. We got away for a vacation for a couple of weeks, and we went down to Vegas. And most people go, you can't go to Vegas for a couple of weeks. But the way we do it, we can. Because we stay in a nice, quiet place, and we walk every day and cook for ourselves and just enjoy the hot weather and the pool. So one day, this big black storm cloud was starting to roll in from sort of over the mountains and coming in over the Vegas buildings. And we were in the pool and I was starting to get ready to leave. I said to him, you know, I think a good storm's coming in. We should probably go up to our room. So he was still lying there and I saw something. So I walked over sort of to the edge of the pool deck and I'm looking up at this black storm cloud. And I see, at first I thought it was birds because, I don't know, because it was several of them. There was three or four of these things. And then I thought, well, they're not birds because they're not moving like birds. They were moving in sync. They were kind of like, you know how drones move in sync, but then they weren't in sync, but they were moving very smoothly and slowly. They weren't flapping or flocking or doing anything. And they were bright silver. They were so bright. And then the three moved down low, sort of closer to me. And I thought, no, those are not birds. And I'm looking at, could they be drones? But it was just so random because as the clouds cleared behind, you could see there was probably another five or six in behind in the cloud. And as the clouds were moving, you could kind of see them moving in and out of the clouds. But in the meantime, one just kind of came to the forefront and just stopped dead in the middle of the sky. And it was just bright, bright, bright silver. And the rest were kind of now just poking in and out of the clouds. But yeah, it was just the oddest thing. And I don't know, maybe it was drones, but in my mind, it was too intentional and too non-drone-like to be anything else but orbs or something in the sky over Vegas, which I've heard is quite common there. So that's kind of the end of my little stories and my secrets. And you know, I tell it now and I go, oh, it's no big deal, because I know there's so much more out there now. But for our family, it was a really big deal. And my grandparents were really scared about losing their social status. And even for me, like, I've told a few friends, not lots, I've told a few friends some of these stories. And you really get a mixed bag of reactions. Like, some people are very, very skeptical. But it's, as my mom said, you know, once it happens to you, you know, we know what we saw. So that's kind of where I'm going to leave that.
Wow, some interesting accounts there. And it is important, isn't it, to talk to family members, because else we wouldn't have heard these little gems.
They are little gems. They're not, you know, like, there's no stories, I don't think, of you know, anybody waking up inside a ship or anything really spectacular. But to me, it says that it's real and it's there. And it's, I'm really happy that people are on here sharing, because it gave me kind of the courage to say, you know, it's time. It's time, because if every ordinary person who saw things like this would come forward, then there wouldn't be as many or as much disbelief.
You are absolutely right. And we wouldn't be worried about, you know, it affecting people's social status, which, you know, I totally understand that. But wow, interesting. Yeah. And that's great news about your daughter as well. I hope it continues.
Yeah, so far so good. They weren't sure how long she'd live, and that was at 11, and she's 30, turning 30 in January. So it's all good news.
Oh, that's great stuff. And yeah, it does sound like she got her immune system from her father, definitely.
Yeah.
But you don't have to worry about insuring him if he's never sick. I mean, in 35 years and he's been, what, sick once or twice?
Yeah, it's really quite disgusting.
It's a little bit like that with me and my wife. She's usually the sick one, and I just kind of seem to get kind of lucky when it comes to things like that.
Yeah, oh boy. 32 years of luck other than an appendix. Is pretty good.
That is very strange. And usually, yeah, what it does, you know, people do have problems with it. I've known plenty of people who have problems with their appendix, and yeah, it's got to come out. But if it's burst several times and then sorted itself out, that is very unusual.
Within hours. Like, I can see even if it would take a few days, but it's bizarre. Yeah, nobody I know can metabolize poison in their system like that. That's something very odd.
And no, I'm not saying this is actually, you know, this happened to your husband, but when I do have abductees, contactees that have these experiences, there is usually something different about their overall health.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder often. I mean, I don't think he's really had any experiences that he remembers since then. And as I said, we've been together a long time, but I really do feel like something very odd happened in that family.
Yeah, that is very strange. I mean, they found him directly under the camper van. exactly where he was sleeping, but below the van. Yeah, that's an unusual one, because I do get a lot of people which recount their stories and they've woken up under the bed. They've woken up in the closet. They've woken up upside down in the bed. They've woken up with their pajamas and nightie on inside out. So there's all these little things which does kind of indicate that they have been put back wrong, or, you know, maybe hurried. Mm. What does he feel about it?
Well, it's funny because he laughs, but he believes it. I mean, often his, and when we've told that story to a few friends, they've laughed and said, "Oh, that explains everything." But he does believe it, I think. That really did happen to him, because he's heard the same story from his parents for years without any differences. So yeah, when stories don't change like that, I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I think he thinks he was taken.
Very interesting. Okay. And Mexico. Do you remember exactly where that was, where that account happened?
Yes, it was in Puerto Vallarta. In the olden days, you know, the good years of the 70s before it was all built up, it was a real beautiful, expensive, lovely resort area. It was still nice.
And there were several which viewed this UFO.
Well, it was my grandfather and my grandmother after a night that they'd been out. And they didn't tell any of the people that they were hanging out with there because they thought that they would think they were crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, these accounts which just would never have been heard before, unless you came on and shared this.
Well, I think it's interesting that generation did understand the ramifications of talking about it. So I think there's a lot of families out there that have these types of, I don't think they're big secrets, but they've been told not to talk about it. You know, probably if they overheard it as children, they've been told not to talk about it. But the history is there. And it's sort of like my mom going back to 1940 and her saying, well, we all knew that they were there. And in 1940, there was nothing. It went that fast, you know. So I think that they've just been around a really long time, and that human beings have been brainwashed to not, you know, not talk about it.
That is true. And, you know, you can go by a lot of my guests, which are in their later years now, 70s and 80s. And now they're coming forward and saying, yeah, this happened to me. This happened to my family. They wouldn't speak about it because, like you said, the ramifications of it all.
Yeah, that's for sure. You could lose your job. All kinds of things.
You know, what we do, you know, this to our listeners, what we do on this show is, if you've had an experience and you don't really want your peers, your work colleagues to maybe find out, then we can just use a pseudonym. We can conceal your name, because it's not necessarily about getting someone to come completely forward, name and everything. It's the account which is important. So you can always do that.
Yeah, that's really nice that you can, because I bet that makes it more comfortable for a lot of people.
We have a lot of people in certain positions. I've even actually been contacted by an American politician that has had these experiences, but they cannot come out because, you know, it would be a serious problem for them.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but it's important for these, you know, these accounts to come out. Absolutely. And more, as the weeks go by, it's more and more people which are happy to come forward. They're like, this is the time now. This is the time I want to get it off my chest, tell someone, and not keep this inside anymore.
Yeah, I have to say, I was really nervous about doing this, and I don't know why, but it just seemed like it was a compilation of just a lot of family stuff. And it's almost like when you do ancestry and you find an odd cousin that you didn't know you had. Every family has sort of their little secrets and their things that, you know, they used to call it dirty laundry. And they used to treat stuff like this as dirty laundry. And it was, you didn't even really want to talk about it much within the family, you know?
I agree. Yeah. A lot of these little embarrassments used to be locked in the attic and everything, didn't they? So you'd never hear about it. But this is the good thing about talking to your family about stuff, because you don't know what you might hear.
Yeah, I betcha. And I think things are escalating anyways. I think that these things want to be seen. And so therefore, you know, if I can throw a little bit into the back history, I'm happy to. And I'm happy to just have it off our family conscience, and that it's out there now and
if there's other people that it's happened to, then they don't, you know, they can see that it's not a scary thing to just, especially with this crowd, you know, this is a very accepting place to be.
Absolutely. You know, listeners to this show are very like-minded. And do you have also listeners which haven't experienced and were very skeptical of the subject? And I would get emails and they would say, you know, I've no interest in this subject. I do work in the science field. And I now believe, after listening to these accounts, that there is something of substance there. And it's something which should be definitely professionally looked at and researched. So when you hear things like that, people are taking notice. And if it wasn't for shows like this, then we'd just be where we were 10, 15, 20 years ago, where it was all being shunned. There is progress happening every single week now. And you're right, they want to be seen. They've wanted to be seen for generations. And now it's time to know. And you get really tired of getting lied to by the, you know, by the governments of the world. But times are changing. And the more people which come out, you know, the more information we have and the more we have to work on.
Yes, and thank you so much for doing what you do, because it's such an accepting, easy platform. It's easy to listen to, and it's also easy to, I think it's also easy to believe, because the people that you have on, they're just the, you know, they're real. They're not people that are putting it on. This is real stuff, and that's made real impact in their lives on, in one form or another.
I couldn't agree more. You said you were nervous, but I think you did just fine. I think the listeners will agree with me.
Thank you. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Wonderful. Lauren, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Thank you very much. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
You're more than welcome. You enjoy the rest of your evening now, and we will speak soon.
Yeah. Okay. Bye. Take care.
Bye for now. Based in southeast coastal Georgia, Coastal Preparedness Supply is dedicated to helping ordinary folk achieve advanced preparedness and maximum self-sufficiency under any circumstances at affordable prices. Their message is simple: plan ahead before disaster strikes. In these unprecedented times, it's vital to be prepared. Whether it's the looming threat of war or another pandemic, a power outage or even a job loss, you can always be ready to help not only yourself, but friends, family, neighbours, and even strangers as well. Full spectrum preparedness is essential as uncertainty mounts. Coastal Preparedness Supply is here for you. Whether you're new to prepping or well seasoned, casually interested or passionately devoted, visit coastalprepsupply.com/UFO now to take advantage of a site-wide holiday season discount, and use the discount code UFO at checkout for free shipping on selected items, or hit the link below to access this offer. Again, that's coastalprepsupply.com/UFO. Coastal Preparedness Supply, your one-stop shop for all your survival and emergency preparedness needs. Hello, Nate. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today, and you're calling from the state of Oregon.
Yes, I'm calling from the state of Oregon, and my encounter happened in March of 2021, so a few years ago now.
No problem. You know, some of our guests we have on, their encounters and experiences go back 50-odd years, so it's always better late than never. Now, Nate, you have an experience with your son in Nevada. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, sir?
Yes. So in March of 2021, this was about a year after pandemic, we were looking to take a trip after having been kind of off and inside, locked inside on and off for the previous year, to go visit some family that I have in northern Arizona. And I live in the mountains of southern Oregon, and me and my son decided we were going to take a road trip and head down there. And at the time, since it was still kind of pandemic-y, rules were different, we decided we would go through Nevada, go through the mountains and go through Nevada to get to Arizona and see some ghost towns. And it seemed safer to be out in some of those places because they're a lot less populated, a lot less going on. There were still places that were, you know, shut down, or you had to have masks and things like that. So we decided to take this road trip. We left Oregon, Southern Oregon, on Thursday, March 25th, 2021. And we made our way down out of Oregon around Mount Shasta through the Sierra Nevadas around Reno, And that first day, my son was 8 years old at the time, so he could only get so far in the car before he was wanting to climb out of the seat, so to speak, and do something different. So we got down to that particular night to Hawthorne, Nevada, which is like a military type town in the middle of Nevada. And we got some pizza at the local pizza place and got a hotel room for the night. And everything was, you know, normal traveling at that point. We stayed the night in Hawthorne Thursday night. And like a lot of kids on a road trip, he didn't sleep very well. And by 4:30 or 5 in the morning, he was peeking out the window of the hotel telling me he could see daylight coming over the desert, which was true. I tried to keep him in the room as long as I could to get more sleep. But I think somewhere around 5:30 or 6 a.m., I kind of gave up and thought, well, we have a lot of driving to still do to get to Arizona. Don't know if it's going to take another day or two with him wanting to explore around Nevada, but let's just hit the road early. So we left the hotel in Hawthorne, Nevada. I would estimate somewhere around 6:30 in the morning. There was a McDonald's that was open, and I got him some breakfast so he could eat it on the drive. And we head south. For those that are going to be looking on the map during my story, we're heading south on 95 in the state of Nevada out of Hawthorne, Nevada. And about 25 miles or 30 miles south of Hawthorne is a town called Lunning, Nevada. And I say town in quotation marks because I would guess there's only 25 or 50 people that may ever actually inhabit the town. But as we were coming down the 95, my son's in the backseat of a four-door car that we're driving. And when you're in that area of the desert on 95, you can see down the highway. This is starting to become broad daylight, 6:45, 7 in the morning. You can see down the highway quite a few miles in some stretches because it's just flat desert. And as we were coming closer towards the town of Lunning, I see a lot of red and blue police lights coming north at us on the 95. And my instinct as a father, and I also, sidebar, have worked a lot of contract security as my jobs in my life. And so I'm definitely an observe and report kind of person. So this whole story, you're going to hear how I've definitely was taking notes of all these weird things that were happening. But the point is, I see a lot of police cars coming up the highway towards me and my son, who are traveling in a car. My son's 8 years old. I didn't want him to be in the middle of a police pursuit or some kind of emergency situation on the highway. And as I'm coming into Lunning, I see a sign that says State Route 361, Gabs, Nevada. It's coming to my left, which would be eastbound into the deserts of Nevada. And it's like a dirt, it's a state route. It's not even a real highway. It's like a gravel road, if I remember correctly, or a dirt road. So I see that, and it kind of had some wide side areas to the side of the road that were in the desert, just like loose dirt that you could get out of the way. So I pulled my car off on that 361 state route to get off the 95 highway, where there's a lot of police officers coming north up the highway. And I'm parked in my car facing the desert and going towards the east, and the highway's behind me. So I'm kind of looking in my rearview mirror. My son's in the back seat. And I said, hey, you're going to see a lot of police officers going past us on the highway behind you. And my son says, yeah. So he's trying to turn around. Now, another sidebar, my father is a retired police officer. So my son's very big on police officers and military and things like that. So he's looking out the back of the car to see the police officers. And he then says, the police officer's coming for you, Dad. And I look in my mirrors and see that the Nevada State Trooper or Nevada State Police was pulling up to the side of my car with his lights on. And I could see behind me in the highway that they were doing this to every car on the road. They were surrounding the cars and the trucks. There was only a few of us. It was barely 7 a.m., but it was broad daylight. They were surrounding the vehicles at this intersection and kind of cordoning us off from each other and the roadway. And I roll down my window, and he's staring at me, this police officer. He looks very angry. He had the mirrored sunglasses. And he says, you can't be there. You need to move your car right now. And I said, okay, I'm sorry. My son's in the backseat of the car. I saw police coming. I didn't want to get out of the way of the emergency. And he goes, that's where they're taking it. You can't be there. Move your bleeping car right now, and don't do anything stupid. And I said, okay, sir. And he said, go over there. He points across the 361
state route road to another dirt area off the side of the road opposite of where I'm parked. And I said, okay. And so I made the U-turn and turned where he told me to. And he immediately turned his car over that way and parked his car like as close to my door as possible. He's staring at me with his sunglasses through the window. And right then I see other police officers pulling their vehicles to the front and back of my car, essentially surrounding me to where only one side of my vehicle, the passenger side towards the desert, was like open. And I'm starting to understand what's happening to me because I could see police doing this all around the intersection. And particularly, there was a big rig across the highway, someone who I'd really like to speak to one day, who was a big rig truck driver, and he was pushed off the side of the 95. They were doing it to him too. And my son then says, hey, Dad, look it, there's army guys. And I look over and I can see between these police cars kind of coming onto the 361 from the 95. And we're not talking like five cars. I'm talking like 15, 20, 25 police cars. It was a lot of police cars. Some were marked, some were not marked, but they were definitely having the lights and all the stuff. And there was Nevada State Troopers definitely on the scene. And in front of them or behind them, they were like escorting this army truck was coming around the corner. And on the army truck was this, it was like a standard military truck, a transport of some type. There was guys with camo gear and stuff on their heads with machine guns pointed at us, standing in the bed of this army truck. And then that's when my son said, Dad, they have a spaceship. And I looked up and I'm trying to look between the police cars who are surrounding my car and they're all staring at me. And I'm trying to look between their cars and I can see that there's a guy in a white diesel truck. And he had like a tan shirt, it looked like a military type shirt, but it was tan in color. And he had a hat on and he looked like he was very nervous as he was trying to turn the truck. And what was on the bed of the truck was a UFO. I mean, that's the only way to describe it. There's no other word that fits. I tried to look into this now for a long time. That's the only thing that describes it. It was a UFO. They had it. The driver in the truck seemed very nervous because the wingspan of the UFO was coming off the flatbed truck that he was pulling it on. And they were trying to push all of us off the road with the police officers because the wingspan would have clipped our vehicles, the road signs, they had to essentially close both lanes of that highway to get it to where it was going. I made the unfortunate decision to park on the 361, which is where they were taking it off of the main highway to this dirt road. And the truck driver was clearly looking at me and the police officers around my car because he now had to navigate it around us. And I was trying to remain calm because my son's in the back seat of the car. But I have police staring at me. I have military guys in an army truck to my left. I'm kind of up above me on this big truck with their machine guns. And there's this guy trying to pull the truck around the turn off the 95 to the 360 road and not. Clearly, this was not his normal duty, was to move something like this. He seemed like he was stressing to do this and was going really slow. But by going slow, he was giving me the opportunity to see what was on the truck as it went past us very slowly. And it was a standard. First off, he looked like he could have been a military guy, but the military guys in front in the army truck thing in front of him with the transport were definitely the ones like, you know, securing whatever was going on here. And there was one of those behind them as well, if I recall, with more police officers behind them. And as it came by my car, I did have the brief notion to grab my cell phone, but I could see that there's three police officers staring at me in sunglasses from their police cars watching me surrounding my car. I didn't want to have my son be taken into custody by these men. So I just made the decision to leave the phone out of the picture and not try to pick up to take video or pictures like someone would want to, because I feel like I would have been arrested or taken into custody. And so I just try to watch what was going past me. But as it went past me, on the flatbed of the truck was a triangular UFO The wingspan probably, I'm a pretty tall person. I'm almost 6 feet, 4 inches tall. So I would say it was coming off the sides of the flatbed, somewhere a range of 10 to 15 feet on each side of the triangle. So I'm just trying to do the numbers nowadays, but I'm going to guess that from tip to tip of the triangle was like 30 to 40 feet long on one edge. And then my son said, "Dad, the middle of it looks like two cereal bowls. You can't fit in there, but I could climb in there and fly it. I could fly that spaceship." And I was looking at it, and that's when I realized, like, this doesn't, even if it's a drone, why is there a hole or an area for something to be inside, like a command capsule or whatever you want to call it, in the middle of this triangle? They had it covered in tarp, but it was wrapped very tightly like a present. So you could see the shape of it, clearly triangular all the way around with two cereal bowls, one on top of the other in the middle. The weird thing also I felt was, I think what my son was referring to was it was not very tall off the bed of the truck. It was more wide. And so someone of my size being 6'4" is not going to be able to climb into it. You're going to need a kid or a horse jockey size person or something to go in there. And this is not clearly being protected. I mean, if it was a drone, why would they need all these guys? I was trying to analyze, but I'm trying to tell my son that must be a UFO. I'm trying to remain calm. My heart was beating out of my chest. I'm telling him that must be what people see in the sky as a UFO, but clearly our government has it. Clearly our government, this is their craft of some sort. And he kept saying, yeah, that would be a cool thing to go fly in space. And that's when it kind of dawned on me, like, if this is a drone, this is the biggest drone ever. Who's operating this? And then I'm thinking, where would they fly this? Why were they out here in the desert taking it down the highway? And they kind of got past my car and were going slowly. And then the next military truck of guys with machine guns were behind them, kind of like falling in behind. And then the police officers, as they got farther down the 361 state route in Nevada, going eastbound towards Gabs, Nevada, which is also a slight ghost town, they were taking it real slow down that dirt road. The cops kind of started letting people on the main highway go, the trucker and stuff, and kind of falling in behind the military dudes going down this road. And I was so nervous. I didn't know where to go or what to do. I was trying to analyze, like, what am I seeing? And the first two police officers around our car drove off behind the motorcade, but one last one that was like in front of me backed up, and he pulled his car next to the back area of my car, and he kind of gave my son the thumbs up, kind of like a smile at him, like you saw it, you know. And then he was like the last guy to go off behind the motorcade, and they continued eastbound on the 361 heading towards Gabs, Nevada, which is in the middle of nowhere. So I didn't, at that point, was kind of like released to go. I didn't know what to do. So I just got in my car and started driving back to the 95, which I was just a little ways off of it. And then I didn't, my initial reaction, because I was so nervous, my heart was racing. I couldn't believe what we had just saw. I kept trying to tell my son that, you know, it was a cool thing that he saw. And this is, you know, but I was also, as a dad, very nervous, because I know that those police officers got my license plate and they saw my vehicle and my Oregon license plate. And I'm sure they know who I am, let's just say. And so I then at that point got us on the 95 and started to continue on our journey. And I'm thinking, like, who do you even call to report this to? I'm going to call the police and tell them that their own police are doing this, or the military guys in the desert of Nevada are doing what I guess we've all heard they've been doing. And up until this point in my life, I had always, you know, been curious about these things. I've, you know, seen shows and radio shows, but I was not like a firm believer any which way or the other. I always assumed that maybe the government had our own things. And definitely after analyzing all this, maybe what I could have saw was not necessarily extraterrestrial, let's say, as in off of this planet, but this was definitely something that they were flying and taking care of in a way that this is like their most secretive craft, if that's their own craft. But what happened that kind of gave me some more details that I think people would want to know about this story is that we then went on the 95, and as you come into Lunny, Nevada, there's what they could call a rest stop, quote unquote, but it's like a little dirt gravel parking lot on the side of the 95 highway. And there's like a little brick building, two bathrooms, men and women's restroom there. And I thought, well, we'll park there. And there's a lot of people, not I'll say a lot, but say 25 people in total, you know, a dozen cars that were on the road that day with us that saw this. And they were pulling in there as well. And I think we were all kind of in a state of shock. And people were going, did you see it? Did you just see what we just saw? Is that really what we just saw? One guy's all, that was a UFO. I'm calling my brother. And there was like people like kind of freaking out besides us. And there was kind of like a lot of them trying to use the restroom at once. So there was a little bit of a line and my son was going to use the restroom. Then I saw this maroon Ford pickup truck pull on a nice big diesel type truck. And this older Hispanic couple got out and the woman seemed to be going to use the restroom. And I mean, I guess it was her husband was driving and he had like a Navy hat, USS, whatever Navy hat on his head. And he says to me and my son, he said, well, you saw it. Did you see it? And my son said, yeah, I saw the spaceship. And he said, you did. You saw a spaceship today. And I said, what? And I said, are you serious? Is that really what that was? And he says, well, I used to be in the Navy and I worked for the Department of Defense for a number of years. And I'm now a retired former contractor on the test site. And I said, where is the test site? Because I knew that there was stuff down there, but I didn't know in relation to where we are in Lane, Nevada. And he says, well, I live in outside Beatty now. He's all, but I've been retired for a few years. He's all, they have them down there in the test site. And I said, okay. And he goes, well, they've been trying to move them. The scuttlebutt in Beatty at the restaurants is that they've been moving them like once a week or once every other week, and they're moving them north. And I said, well, where are they going out there? And he said, they have a new facility. He said, 25 to 30 miles outside of Gabs. Now, I'm pretty sure, I thought he said southeast of Gabs, but he may have said southwest of Gabs, because later research via the internet, which we'll talk about in a second, kind of backs up that story. But he said that the exact words were, there's too many looky-loos and tourists coming out of Las Vegas to the test site, so they can't test them there anymore. So they're moving them north to other areas of the desert where there's less people. And obviously, if you look on a map at Gabs, Nevada, there's nothing out there. It's a dirt road. I'm sure sections you might even need 4x4 capabilities, and gas stations are probably hard to come by. So that kind of shocked me. And he said that his wife had seen the military moving another one of them a week or two before while she was having breakfast or getting ready to have breakfast at one of the restaurants that was just opening in Bay, Nevada. Now, if you go to the Bay, Nevada, there's only like two restaurants, like the Denny's and like another private breakfast type place that this could have happened. But both of them sit on the highway that you'd have to take 95 north if you're going to come out of anywhere down there and go north to where they were going, where I saw them. Now, later, so I talked to him for a few minutes, thanked him. You know, he was kind of talking to Mike. He was more just having fun with my kid and what my kids being so excited about it. We used the restroom. A lot of people were still freaking out about it, but I had to kind of continue on the road. I had to go to Arizona, and we took off from there and kind of did the whole 95 all the way down to Las Vegas. And it kind of, you know, just since that time, it has obviously changed my life quite a bit, because I now realize that I don't need anyone or a documentary or what's coming out now in the news to tell me that it's real. This is real. Well, the question is, what I saw is it their test vehicle that they made to go somewhere? Because they're not flying this from New York to London. This is obviously something built to go off planet, or highly undercover, or wherever, you know, I don't even know where you're trying to deploy this to. That's one question. If it's a drone, then why would they needing all these guys with guns to protect it? Why would they transport it that way? Another thing that I took notice of when they were, this was literally wrapped under tarps, put on straps like any big truck would have. And part of the reason why the guy driving had to be so nervous is because when it came past us, it was kind of rolling on the bottom of the cereal bowl in the center of this craft. And it clearly, they didn't have like support or something to keep it mounted to this trailer. This almost seemed like either they were moving it and don't usually move it and didn't know how to move it properly, or they had been test flying it somewhere and it went down in the desert and they're trying to bring it back. And this isn't how they probably normally plan to do that, but this is how they're happy to do it. And, you know, all that doesn't lead to a drone, in my opinion. The cockpit of the triangle would not fit a normal guy. It would have to be someone very small. You'd have to probably lay them down inside there or something, or sit in if they were really small in a small chair. I don't know. I couldn't see the inside. I just saw the shape of it from the tarps wrapped on the outside. But I try to look over every drone photo, every photo of a craft known, at least the ones that they will let be on the internet of military stuff, and nothing fits what we saw that day. The way that they were transporting it, the way he was saying from the area, if they were coming out of Beatty to transport it from down there, that's closer to what people would call, you know, quote unquote, Area 51, that to get where we are is a couple hours north. They would probably have to have left down there at 4 a.m. to get to where we are at 7 a.m. when we intercept them, though they're going out the 361. But part of what did lead in my internet research, I think I sent to you, Nick, was that there was, my internet research says that the fallen naval air station was in 2018 requesting hundreds of thousands of acres of public land to be taken into their base, basically, to expand their warfare operations and training operations for aircraft. And if you look at the map and go 25 miles or so southwest or west of Gabs, that would be where there would be, but this guy is saying they were building the new facilities to store the craft that I saw going down the road that day. So that's basically my story. I've not really had any other, contrary to popular belief, I haven't had any men in black or any negative experience with the government. I don't feel like they're following me in any way. And I just haven't had any opportunity to tell my story. I think the difference in my story to other people's story is that mine was in broad daylight. Mine was two or less car lengths from me. Mine was wrapped in a tarp. So yes, I couldn't see what color the metal was, but it was a hard shaped, large craft. And there's no like, I didn't see it in the sky, like a light at night or something like a lot of people see. Mine was in broad daylight. It was 7 a.m. They had sunglasses. We're in the desert. They were guarding it at the end of machine guns. So clearly that's a very valued thing for them. But I think that they were just at the end of their trip and we were kind of the 7 a.m. traffic that they were not expecting to have maybe that many cars at that intersection at that time. And I particularly went on the wrong road. I got in their travel path. So they were not happy about that. But it did make me far more patriotic, I got to say, as an American, because now I realize they're not wasting all my tax dollars. They're clearly out there doing something, planning for something big or using these in some capacity or trying to, and where they plan on going and what they plan on doing is far bigger and more important than the things that we're being led on in day-to-day life. They're not messing around, and there's probably, you know, 4 or 5-star generals somewhere in those facilities in Nevada, and they have these things. Now, whether they got them from true extraterrestrial craft or whether they're, you know, archaeological digs and they're finding them or whatever, this thing to me did not seem damaged in any way from what I could see of the way it was wrapped in the tarp. This was an intact thing. But if this was flying above you, this would be the most superior aircraft that anyone human could ever have. It would probably be a heck of a tool to have in warfare because it would psychologically affect your opponent. I don't know, though, that what the way they were transporting it and the way they were acting, I don't know that they know how to operate it. That's kind of what made me wonder more if it was not really ours. Or maybe it's a copy of something they have and they're trying to make copies of that and learn how to use them. But that's my story. And I'll talk to them or you or anyone else that wants to hear it. There's no like if, ands, or buts. I don't need to believe anymore. It's real. I saw it. And the way that they're protecting it and the way they're acting about it, they would have probably shot me or anyone at that intersection that day that tried to get out of our vehicles to touch it. And the cops were there to watch every single one of us in case we took pictures or video. And I'm sure if we did, our phones and us would have been arrested and taken somewhere to some military base. So I don't know that they would do all that for a drone.
Interesting stuff, Nate. That must have been quite an experience for you and your son.
Yeah, he thought it was cool. He'll just tell everyone it was the coolest thing he ever saw, and he wants to learn how to fly one. You know, he was only 8 years old then. He's 10, going to be 11 now. We are going to go make the same journey again. We've done this trip a few times. That was just the only time we saw that. But we are going to be going back sometime this March for his birthday again and going down through there. And we'll probably stop at the intersection and kind of try to re-examine what it was we saw and where we were when we saw it.
Well, when you head down there this time, obviously, you know, we don't blame you for not being able to get any pictures off because, in all fairness, you know, they were keeping their eye on you and they just wouldn't let you do it. But when you go down there this time, you know, if you take some, get a few pictures of the area and we'll put them on the website. And I guarantee it, you know, as we are speaking, there are people which are going to be on Google Earth, looking at Gabs and what's around Gabs. And if they were taking it up that way, and there has been a lot of talk over the last few years, a lot of hardware and stuff has been coming out of test sites, which is only 2-3 hours, you know, to Rachel, that kind of direction, because... Mm-hmm. Whole area is so famous now. That's where everyone goes. Everyone goes to Las Vegas and they then head out the desert, try and get closer to this to Area 51 and Groom Lake to see all the lights. It would make sense that they're moving all this stuff out to a quieter location.
Yeah, and I didn't, you know, again, and I didn't really thought of any of that. I was just kind of in the wrong place or right place, wrong time, whichever way you want to view it. But definitely looking back and doing the internet research and seeing how they were petitioning in Nevada to have all that land grab and to build more naval, airspace. And and again, if you go to that area of Nevada, it's way more remote than even the areas outside Beatty and out between, you know, Beatty and Rachel are on each side of where the traditional test sites would be on the map. Gabs is far more remote and far more less eyes to see what's going on. There is a few people that I believe live in Gabs, but if they would even, they would have to have seen it because the road goes right through Gabs, is my understanding. So I did try to ask people in Tonopah and other places down the highway, Goldfield, or if they saw anything, but it was so early in the morning in some of those places they weren't awake. And the one girl in Tonopah said that everyone's husband works for the military, so even if we saw something, we wouldn't tell you guys what we see anyways, because that's how we get our paychecks. So that was the kind of her answer to it. But yeah, I'm going to definitely go back and take some video for YouTube and some pictures of the intersection and where we were at when this happened, and show the rest stop and the different places we were when it happened. I haven't had any time or as a father to go. I don't want to feel safe. Basically, that's what it boiled down to, is I probably would have risked taking a picture or video if I was alone in the car and they could have arrested me and I would have dealt with what I dealt with. But it still probably would have took me and my phone away. I don't know if it would have ever came to be seen by the public, but I had my kid in the backseat, and that changed everything and made me feel like, well, I really don't want him to be penned up in some military place while dad's being interrogated or whatever is happening. I mean, they were clearly not playing around about what they were doing that day in the desert. But yeah, and I definitely, looking at a map, that would we were north of Tonopah. This is an area that's even more, with Hawthorne being up there too, there's a lot of military army stuff going on up there. So I would imagine all their resources between that and Naval Fallen Air Station, or where that place is called, they have a lot of facilities up there to access. So and probably less people to view it and harder for people to get to go see it. But I think my main point is if everyone's going to go out there and look around, really, we need to be turning our attention to where did they move these things, like you're saying. And they clearly have either moved them north in the different bases in Nevada, or, you know, who knows where else they would take them.
I mean, we do have a lot of listeners out in Nevada. You are getting your paycheck from the government. You're not going to say too much. But if there is anyone out there in Lunning or even Gabs, if you've seen anything out that way, just like Nate has, you know, get in contact. But if you know a bit of hearsay or a bit of gossip, then feel free to let us know.
That's exactly what I was hoping your podcast and other, by being interviewed or putting it out there, I was hoping other people, there was definitely the truck driver, I saw him and the guy I talked to at the rest stop and some other people that said they were from Oregon and they were going down to Las Vegas, and these people saw it, and some of them didn't work for the government or don't have that looming over them. And I'm hoping that some of them will come forward and say, I was on the highway that day. And just judging from the people I was talking to at the rest stop, it seemed like it had gone through Tonopah, Mina, Lunning to us. Now, whether it came out all the way down by Beatty, where the other guy was saying that they would start the journey from, or whether it would come out Someone else, a guy in Goldfield, said that they would just take it out the top of the Tonopah test range over here south of the Tonopah and not even go all that way. So I don't really know that part of the journey. But yeah, that's what I was hoping for, is that someone else would come forward and say it was definitely March 26, 2021 at 0700 hours at that intersection. So somewhere in the hours before that, it was going up and down to 95.
That's pretty cool. I mean, even if you've seen something out there and you don't want to come on a show, I'm very fortunate to get, you know, emails and messages from people that want to stay anonymous, but they just give us, you know, a little bit of information. They saw this, you know, you don't really want to get involved with the show, but you just want to let us know. You can always do that.
Totally. I appreciate you having me on.
That's a cool story, man. That's, I mean, you're seeing a bit of hardware. We know the government, they have all this high-tech stealthy aircraft and drones and all manner of stuff that we don't always hear about. Have you tried maybe seeing if there's anything that seems familiar along the stealth aircraft lines?
I did look at the photos that I could find online of the stealth craft, and either everything I saw, the problems were that they were either too large, much bigger than this were, or some were like more drones, and the drones did not look as big as this one did. And the main difference I could tell, now it was wrapped in a tarp, and it was kind of hard to say for sure, but the cockpit wasn't like cylindrical, like even some of the stealth aircraft have a cylindrical type of cockpit that a guy has seen. And this was definitely two, like my son said, two cereal bowls, one on top of the other, short ones, wide in the middle as the cockpit. And I haven't seen anything like that with a perfect triangle. The two wings were coming off the side, like towards my vehicle, and one towards the other side of the road. And then they had the back of the triangle kind of going towards the back of the flatbed of the truck hanging off the backside. And I haven't seen anything that looks that perfect of a triangle. This was a triangle, like no bends to it, no curvature. And I haven't seen that. If anyone could present photos to me or you, I would greatly appreciate it, because I've been digging around for hours looking, and I don't see anything that has that same shape or dimensions.
It's not every day that you get someone get in contact with you that they've seen a nice bit of hardware.
Yeah, and like I said, I've also been trying to find other people that had more of a broad daylight sighting, and the only one like Googling it that seems similar was like the Lonnie Zamora thing in New Mexico, but he had like an egg-shaped craft and all that kind of stuff back in the 50s or 60s, wherever that was I saw, but he was daytime. But a lot of the other ones are at nighttime, or you're seeing something in the sky far off, and this was like like if I could have got out of the car and climbed over the police car, I could have grabbed the tip of the wing and said, what is this about? But they were clearly not going to have that. And if I did, I probably would have been shot or arrested. So
did have a guest on a while ago, and he was on a road trip as well. And he was down towards Tonopah, that kind of way, and then moving on down towards Rachel. And they had a lot of sightings of weird lights down that way.
Yes, I did. I listened to that episode that you had, because I didn't try to search around, particularly because of where I was. I've tried to search out stories that are happening in Nevada, in the desert where I was at, rather than off in other places and stuff. And I did listen to that one. He was just on the opposite side of, he would have been on like on the east side of those test sites that were, we were on the northwest corner of all of that stuff. And I don't, one thing that was mentioned to me, I should say, I did stop on the travels, because again, this is something we try to do once a year or every other year at least. And on one of our travels, we were in the Goldfield area, and a guy in an army jacket had a conversation with me about it. I just asked him, have you ever seen anything weird flying out here? And he basically told me on Wednesday and Thursday nights, they fly something out of the Tonopah test range that doesn't know how to fly very well, and they have a hard time keeping it in the air. He's all, but most of us locals will just sit on our deck and watch it. It's about 2 or 3 in the morning. You got to be out here in the middle of night to see it. And so, you know, that kind of did fit in with my later. I thought, well, I'm seeing it Friday morning. They're taking it back. So if they were out test flying it out of the Tonopah test site on a Thursday night and they got it out in the desert and then couldn't get it back, they might have had to send these guys out there to get it and bring it back. But either way, they were going back to someplace near Gabbs, Nevada, in that area, not back down south. So where are they putting it?
Just north of Gabbs, there is Gabbs Airport. But that's, other than the little town, there's not really too much out there, is there?
No, I think with even the population of Gabs is like the same thing, like Lunning, 25 or 50 people, maybe some seasonal cabins and trailers and places. There might be, you know, I'd be 20 or 25 permanent residents. That's probably a journey I'm going to make at some point in time, just to go say, hey, I was out there. You guys are here. It would have came through here at 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning. Did you see it? You know, I don't know if they would speak about it. I don't know how much they in that area rely upon the military for their employment. But I know there's a lot of mining in that area. So,
I mean, out Hawthorne way, I mean, that's U.S. military. And then there's a lot of stuff out there surrounding Hawthorne that's military based. But I bet you Gabs, I bet you they have a few stories. It's just a shame they won't tell them sometimes.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was just kind of hoping, that maybe a few more people who were either on the road that day and don't live there, so they're not in fear. Like, I'm not really in fear. I mean, the police clearly had my license plate and saw who I was, and the guy was yelling at me. So, I mean, they want to come to my door and talk to me or whatever. They weren't even trying to necessarily hide what they were doing that day. But one thing the guy at the rest stop said that was true, he said, well, what do you think, 50 or 100 people on the highway saw it today out of millions and billions of people on Earth? Is anyone going to believe us? And that's just how I feel. They don't. That's why they were doing it at that. They don't really, unless you're going to sit out there like every day, every moment waiting for them to come by, you're not going to see it. I just happened to be at the wrong place. My kid woke up too early in the morning and had me on the road too early. And I thought I was getting out of the way of their motorcade, but I was right in their travel path, unfortunately.
Hey, really, you should be thanking your son for this sighting then, because if he hadn't been awake early and excited, you may have just missed all this.
I have considered that for sure. And I think that the cops may have not been so friendly to me if he had not seen my son in the back seat. I think that definitely made them be a little bit less. He was, you know, kind of yelling at me, but I think he was being less as angry as he wanted to be because my kid was in the back seat. And I think that's probably also part of the reason why they weren't more, give me your ID, who are you, all this kind of stuff. They just wanted me to get out of the way and stay in the car.
Yeah, they've been known to be a little bit more full on. I mean, the combination of having your son in the car and the out-of-state plates certainly was in your favor.
Yeah, and I think when I told him, because I didn't even see initially what was coming up the highway, because there was so many of the cops at the front of this motorcade. All I saw was police. And so I said, I just thought there was an emergency. I'm getting out of the highway because I have my kid in the car. And I think that kind of registered to him, I'm not trying to be a looky-loo. I'm just getting out of the way. And that's when you just move your car over there. Don't do anything stupid. And I remember thinking, that's weird. Why would you say don't do anything stupid? So I made a U-turn, and then that's when I saw the army truck coming around the corner, and I'm like, what is going on? And the craft, honestly, in the center of all of this seemed kind of relatively small on the bed of the truck. I mean, because it, you know, it's just, but there was all this activity going on all sides of it with army guys and cops and machine guns. And the truck driver was having to stop and then go and stop and go, because I think he was checking in his mirrors to make sure that these wings of this thing are not going to clip a road sign or a police car or me or anyone else that's on the road. It didn't seem like this was his normal duties or normal payload. He was stressing about how to get this thing off the road.
Interesting. Thank you for sharing this.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And we'll definitely be in touch when I get out there in a few months and take some pictures and video. I will send them to you.
Definitely. And I'll add all that to the website. That's great. I'll put a map up so people get a general idea. And as I guarantee, there's going to be tons of internet sleuths now that are going to be checking out the area.
Yeah, because they definitely need to look up those articles. It's very clear on the internet that they were trying to, and you know, if in 2018 they're trying to get 688,000 acres or something or whatever it said of land and to expand the base. And if that's what they were doing, then by 2021, when I'm there, they could have well already grabbed the land, built facilities, made roads, done whatever they needed to do. And that could have been what I was seeing, was them trying to transport something to and from that area. I think that that's really that's kind of what I wanted to get out to the community, was like, hey, this, my encounter was only a couple of years ago, so it's not that long ago. It was obviously far more modern, whatever they're doing. And it's not down there. You're too far south if you're down by Area 51. You need to go up north, and you guys need to surround that area from like Hawthorne to Gabs, and then I guess Fallen to the north. So the other side of it, and that's somewhere out there is where probably trying to fly these things.
Wonderful. Great stuff, Nate.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, man.
No problem. Nate, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing that for our listeners. And hopefully, you know, we get a little bit of feedback from the listening community.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I'm finally, you know, it feels good to finally tell the story because I've been telling it to some family members and friends, but I didn't really have any other, you know, avenues to tell it. And it's cool to have other people that have similar experiences hear about it and know that they're not alone. Clearly something's going on. Awesome, man. Thank you so much, Nick.
Great talking to you, Nate. All right, you enjoy the rest of your evening and we will speak soon.
Okay, thanks.
Bye for now, Nate. That's all for this episode. Keep updated and connected with the show on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Lauren and Nate for sharing tonight, and as always, thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.